At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Graham Malkin Lane Patreon channel. I am here with one of my favorite people to hang out with, Mr. Andre Mason himself. Andre, you may know, is the voice of Angel or Graydon Creed, a frequent guest on Graham Malkin Lane, both on episodes and trials, and my friend who joined me for the incredible Moses Magnum episode way back at the beginning of my Patreon, which is an episode that showed me what we can do on this channel. So I am so happy to have Andre back. We're going to be talking all about a 90s character who is the 90th of 90s characters, Mr. George Washington Bridge. Let me welcome Andre to the show. Andre, tell everybody a little about yourself and what are some of your early thoughts on G.W. Bridge?
Hey, everybody. I am a Graham Malkin, a regular. I am just what I call a professional nerd, just a aging pop culture enthusiast all the way through, but love to have fun with random fandoms. But if I'm here, it's because I have a love for X-Men and everything Marvel. As far as this character is concerned, Marvel has no fucking clue what to do with him. Absolutely none. I did not have a particular opinion about GW because when he showed up, he just showed up randomly. And back then, when Rob Liefeld was on these books, he was just introducing characters like wet paper towels against the wall. He's like, whoever stuck. So I just didn't really, I had no emotion behind him. I was like, okay, it's cool. But, you know, in the land of pouches and unnecessary shoulder pads and oversized boots, he just was a 90s character.
My earliest books were X-Force. I joined at number 27, but I quickly went back and got the early issues. This was the early 90s. It is very Liefeld. There's a trend of using more characters of color, which is a brilliant thing. But let's put the distinguished black guy with the white beard and the white crew cut. We'll put him in charge of the military unit. Just a few years later, we made Nick Fury black, right? The archetype of this kind of in-command military character that I think is a really good portrayal overall, because G.W. Bridge is a very moralistic character. He's complex. He has complex relationships and history. And I think he's overall a well-rounded character, if seldom used as much as he could be.
Yeah. I think given who he is and the status that he had in the book at the time, yes. But he was also a stereotype. And we can have a whole conversation about that, because G.W. Bridge was also just one of many characters of color who were either a cop or a military person. And so literally you can do that across every particular publisher, even DC, like John Stewart, cop, then becomes Green Lantern, or in that sense, he was, you know, had a military background. Anyone at that point had a military background or a cop. Bishop, yeah. Same way.
And
it's a trope.
Well, and it's an interesting thing in minority studies where there's that thing where we can show someone in a position of power. Let's take this black male and show him as a very prominent person and he's succeeding. And that's a stereotype that's an assertion that we need to see in media.
Absolutely, like, yes.
This man who's doing so well. But there always seems to be an undercurrent of, this is that one guy who was able to get out of that community he grew up in and like face the odds and like really made the American dream happen. And there's an odd, because we need that representation, but there's an odd kind of, I don't know the right word for that. There's some subtlety to this when we chew this apart a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's subtleties because you have one extreme where you have the Luke Cages of the world, where he was a prisoner and then became a superhero. And then you have like the Black Panthers,
Falcon, where he was like Falcon, who was given the, you know, the secret life of the street hustling criminal.
Yeah. You had that. But again, he's also a really good example too, because again, he's just another example of a Black character who is introduced in a way that you can trust him. So if he's a cop or if he is a soldier, it is an immediate trust that you're given. But if he is not either of those things,
yes,
you have a problem relating to him. It's important. Yeah, it's there.
We're jumping to 1991. I've got three of these for you. Who would play the better G.W. Bridge? Denzel Washington or Morgan Freeman?
Oh, shit. Okay. All right. I love Denzel, but Denzel has been playing his character from Training Day for the last 20 years and everything. Including Gladiator 2, because Gladiator 2, I watched, I was like, you sound like you're from Brooklyn and not, not Rome. I would say at the time it would be Morgan Freeman, only because GW had that ability to have the experience and the wisdom and also the age, because, you know, we're supposed to believe that he is someone who was a teenager in the Vietnam War. So there's that.
Marvel's sliding time scale.
Yeah, it's a time scale, but I'm really happy that Giancarlo Esposito is playing him
Yes.
now. So I'm really excited over that. I want to see what that happens, you know, how
Okay,
that
so
goes.
again, 1991, Samuel L. Jackson or Lawrence Fishburne?
Lawrence Fishburne.
Okay, and then the third one, James Earl Jones or Danny Glover?
Ooh, Danny Glover.
Okay, so you have to choose one of those three now. Who plays the character, Freeman, Fishburne, or Glover?
All right, Larry Fishburne, circa 1992, the Boys in the Hood era, Lawrence
Okay.
Fishburne.
This is just the last one that I chose not to keep on the same list. But who plays GW Bridge? Will Smith or Eddie Murphy?
Oh my God.
Because that's a very different character.
Oh, okay. So we have the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or Axel Foley. Got it. I'm gonna say it's Will Smith. I have to, because Will at that point at least was giving you a level of gravity in his roles, and it was all over the place. He was, you know, doing a lot at that time, so he was like, I can show you range, so I will say that
This is
it
my
was Will
secret
Smith.
wish, though, and this is the one I kept off the list completely. I want like elderly Sydney Poitier as GW Bridge, like more than anything, because that would be amazing.
Yes. But see, the thing is that Sydney Poitier is almost the same side as Danny Glover.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think they're the same ilk of character.
I thought it was really important to open with this conversation because I think when we take ourselves to the early 90s and then we toss all of these names around, these are names that elicit certain types of roles and feelings. We hear their voices. Samuel L. Jackson goes on to play Nick Fury, right? We see these characters played by these actors in very different and distinguished ways. And I think that creates a certain energy for GW Bridge, who is a very complex character who has some very interesting politics. And he's relatively well represented over time. But this is a military man. This is a veteran who, when he got home, he joined the National whatever Shield Force and worked his way up the ranks. He has secret missions. He completes assassination. He toes the government line. He reports up the chain of command, and he's risen his way through the ranks. But before he was that guy, after his soldier years and before his Shield years, we have his mercenary years, which is a really interesting thing when we stack this character up because this is the Deadpool missions. This is GW Bridge with his group, the Six Pack, running around and completing missions for money, even when they are terribly bad decisions and like
They're
terribly.
inefficient. They were so inefficient, and it's amazing they
And they
got
can
as far
hurt
as they
so many people. But then
got.
you bring him in as the guy who's now toeing the government line at the command level. And where he chooses to draw the lines of his ethics in a complicated world of superheroes, that's my favorite part of this character. Are you surprised at me opening here?
No, because the thing is that he's complicated. And again, that's what I said, they don't know what to do with him. He had a very staunch belief of justice and in service, and he was very much, you know, about his country, which is anti-ethical to the fact that you become a mercenary in that area. So it's almost like, okay, well, what was going on that you did not parlay whatever your military service record was into a general position or anything of that matter? What happened in between that said, okay, well, I'm just gonna lend out my services for money at that point.
And we know next to nothing about this man's backstory.
Nothing.
So we're left to draw conclusions about his motivations. But he's right from there from the beginning. I kind of imagine he was one of those guys in like Rob Liefeld's, book from when he was a kid. They just, Gideon, the green ponytail guy. And Bridge is there right from X-Force number one with the Liefeld-Nicieza reinvention of or relaunch of New Mutants. We're down in Antarctica. There's some copters and an explosion and some medical trucks. And the Mutant Liberation Front headquarters has been detonated. And we meet Commander Bridge there. He red shirt and boots, green pants, metal shoulder pads and knee pads, multiple guns on the back. He's very cable. He's very, very cable. He has a tech headpiece. He analyzes the weapons. There's metal with no markings. Cable's trademark. Even Shield can't analyze. Tell someone to call me George. I don't like titles or labels. Hero, villain, human, mutant. None of it matters squat to me. Only right or wrong. When And Fury gives him whatever authorization he needs to bring Cable in, because they're confusing Strife for Cable here. That's the
Absolutely. Yeah,
thing.
that's the thing. Yeah.
Bridge then calls General Clark at Department H, which well, nope. So
Why? Why?
he wants Garrison Kane or Weapon X. We're going to learn their history together in a minute, but we have someone who has a strong sense of ethics, no patience for labels, and is willing to work with Weapon X to get the job done when Fury gives him authorization. That's what we get right from the start.
Yeah, right from the start. So you're already being introduced to someone who is technically a Maverick. He can go rogue, which is, I think, in part to why Cable selected him for the Wild Pact to begin with. He's not by the numbers, which is, again, wild that considering his background, why wasn't he? So a part of me believes that he was dishonorably discharged from the military somewhere, and we're
So
not finding that out.
in issue two, he goes to Canada. He recruits Garrison Kane. That's a guy who needs an episode another time. We'll talk about him a little. They end up fighting Deadpool on a remote Canadian island. He shoots Deadpool. There's a moment where Garrison Kane says, "Bridge, what are you doing here?" And Bridge says, "Watching your cocky butt." So he gets a lot of lines like that, which is just early 90s to the wazoo, which is crazy. And he wants Kane to help him take down Cable. He's like, "I haven't seen Cable in 7 years," but they agree to work together. In issue four, we see Bridge has been monitoring Cable and X-Force because they fought Juggernaut and Spider-Man. It was there, and the World Trade Center blew up, but Cable escaped. In issue five, we see Bridge meeting with Nick Fury, who's just like smoking fucking cigar rings around the table. Henry Peter Gyrick is there and Valerie Cooper, and they're all being critical of Bridge about like how he's choosing to go after Cable. So there were three white people yelling at the guy. And he gets to say in one line, "Hip deep in it is where I make my living." But they can't really figure out how to get Cable in.
Again, it's like you don't know where to put him. You don't know where exactly his allegiance lie. You know that he's working with people. You don't know how thin that line is. Again, I think GW is cool, and they're positioning him to be like anti-Cable or the other end of Cable, which I think was probably the wrong step, especially when you were introducing Strife. I feel like GW should have been Strife if that was the case.
It's an interesting narrative decision if we put Fabian Nicieza in charge of this, though, because Bridge represents the cop that's going after the hero, right? If Cable is a good guy, this is like an anti-hero good guy who's going against law and order. And that's kind of one of the narratives that X-Force is playing up, because the X-Men have been all about like coexistence, where X-Force will blow your shit up if they feel like it's going to help them get there. Bridge is the Javert to Cable's Jean Valjean in a way, right?
But I think, but once we find out later his real reasons for
Revenge.
revenge, it wasn't about, it wasn't about him being ethical. It wasn't about him being a cop. It wasn't about him seeking justice for something that was perceived as illegal. You know what I'm saying? Like the way you're thinking now, it's like, oh, well, Cable clearly did something illegal by government standards. But like you find out later, that's not really
You
the
can't break
case.
the law, but it's okay for me to break the law to bring you to
Right,
break the law.
exactly.
Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. 33 through 35. In this one, Nick Fury, we get a weird three-issue arc of Bridge training a group of superpower operatives. There's every once in a while we get those like super agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever. He's got a group of people. One of them is Knockabout, whose real name is Jarno Sprague, who's like a strong shirtless guy who throws shit. We've got a girl named Cyborg, Psiborg. This is the Psylocke era. We put Psy in front of everything. But
Everything, yeah.
Cyborg is Fiona Wyman, who has a psychic in like blue costume. We've got a character named Violence, whose real name is Violet Pinkerton, which is amazing. Who is a woman with black leather and like a gun and a hovercraft. And Bridge is like training the agents, but there's this giant battle with one of the worst groups of supervillains of all time. We've got Mad Dog Baxter, who's Patsy Walker's ex-husband, the dog guy.
Oh
We've
my God, that's right. Yeah.
got Overrider, who's this weird dude who can do shit with machines. We've got Assault and Battery, who are two big hefty black guys
I remember that. I
who are
remember
joined at like with like a chain in the middle, right? We've
that.
got Ivory, and then there's a character that has lived in my brain for years because she's so fucking weird. Her name is Smoke Scream, and she's a lady who has like a helmet that's just smoke inside and like a pair of pink goggles, and she has a body and she has smoke powers. And I just want to write her one day. She's one of those weirdos that will never leave me alone, even though she's never shown up again.
Like, well, the thing is that those characters back then, again, you were just like, it was a 90s 90s were just throwing things together. I think from that era, though, I only remember Network Nina.
I love Network Nina.
Because the thing is, I remember Network Nina because, again, back then, you really didn't get a lot of Black characters who had psi powers. So Network Nina being a Black woman with telepathic abilities was like really awesome to me. But, you know, as years go by, because I actually thought that she was Nick Fury Jr.'s mother, if you remember the fact that her and Nick Fury had a relationship. So when Nick Fury Jr. came out, I was like, oh my God, is that is that his mother?
Network Nina is still out there. She always gave me like, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? There was like something about that character that like I don't know. I associated with her with Lynn Thigpen.
She seemed like someone that Nick Fury trusted and would go to because he was like, you know what, I'm kind of down and out. I need to get out of this mess. You know, she was a reliable person who just was like, yeah, the mercenary life isn't for me. Call me when you need like
She's the woman
actual
behind the
help.
screen, right? Yeah,
Yeah,
she's
she
the
is. She is.
dispatcher.
She wasn't going to be this super powered psi operative. I think she did it for a little bit and then like she was like, no, I'm not gonna do it. But yeah, that time was like there was just like again, wet paper towel characters. It's like who's gonna stick and who's not.
This has been the longest tangent ever devoted to Network Nina in the history of the world, and
I
I'm
love
here
Network
for
Nina. Love her. Love her.
That's kind of all for Bridge and Fury. We go back to X-Force, and in X-Force 8 is the middle of that giant Brotherhood of Evil Mutants battle that we've talked about 14 times on this show because I've covered every character's appearance in a trial somewhere. And we take a break in issue 8 where we get a flashback to Cable's old life. Nicieza starts seeding deep history with Cable. And we get a flashback in 8 to 10 years ago in New Mexico where there's a group called the Wild Pack. They're also called the Six Pack because Silver Sable has the Wild Pack in Symbiota. They're raiding a Hydra base for a stolen energy converter. It's fine. It's cute. But we get to see this old team. Do you want to tell us about the members of the Six Pack? Tell everybody who Domino is.
Oh, Nina. Oh, Nina.
Not Network Nina. This is a different Nina.
No. Regular Nina. Nina. That Nina.
So Domino's the mercenary with the luck powers. Hammer's a bald tech guy. He's like the guy that's like a genius with machines, like, right? So Bridge is the mercenary. And then we've
I
got
just remember him getting
Grizzly.
hurt. Yeah, I just remember him getting hurt. I remember Grizzly because Grizzly was huge and he had a big mane. He reminded me of a He-Man character. That's why I remember him because he
He's
also had like the.
got a Patreon on my show. I love Grizzly.
Yeah, he
Who's
also had like a
canonically gay
weird.
now.
Is he?
Yeah, he's
I
canonically
missed that
gay.
one. I did not know that. Okay,
And
I
then
have
we've
to
also got
like
Garrison
check it up.
Kane, who was like the young soldier who got like wounded in combat, becomes a giant cyborg. Okay, so this is a little team of people running around. They really are fond of each other. We jump to X-Force 11. Bridge meets with Kane again back in the present, and they've seen Cable, but it was actually Strife. That person's in charge of the MLF, but also they're in charge of X-Force. And what is Cable up to? It's a lot of that stuff. So Kane puts a group together, Kane and Bridge, including a guy named Yeti. He looks like one of the flesh-eating characters that Wolverine fights in Canada. We don't use the W word on my show. But Yeti is a mutant, just a white furry mutant. There's a guy named Tiger Strike, and it's the 90s, so his name is TYGERSTRYK. And Richter's here. We haven't seen Richter since the end of the New Mutants, and he's back with long hair and like a little punk look. It's cute. And their group name is Weapon Prime, Prime. What are your thoughts on the Weapon Prime lineup?
A lot of these characters are interchangeable. I think I did enjoy Kane. I liked when he just became like that kind of partial cyborg look, and it was very much, again, very 90s. You also can see very early stages of Youngblood, if you remember that group that Liefeld started when he went to Image.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah, so like it was very much like if you guys remember out there, if you remember Youngblood, there was a robot named Die Hard. Literally, it's just it's Kane superimposed. With the arms and everything.
Here is your ultimate Marvel quiz. I bet there's no one who knows the answer to this question. If you do, if you be honest with me, if you know the answer and you answered before I told Andre what the answer is, message me because I will be so impressed. Because I don't think I could do this, and I'm a Marvel like encyclopedia. Weapon Prime, what is the PRIME an acronym for?
Oh my God, I didn't even know it had an acronym.
So it's an acronym for the first word is prototype. So you get the P and the R from prototype. So it's prototype induced mutation echelon.
I've learned something
PRIME.
today. I've learned something today.
And you already can't remember what you just learned, right?
I can't because Marvel has so many freaking acronyms-based organizations. I can't even deal.
So in issue 12, they recruit Grizzly now from the old team.
Mm.
He's in bright gold and red. By this time tomorrow, Cable will either be smart and under arrest or stupid and dead, Bridge says. In 13, Weapon Prime, it's now been 13 issues. It's taken this long for Bridge to do anything. They get
Anything.
their asses kicked so fast by X-Force. And Bridge is ranting about, you can't trust Cable. And Cable shoots him multiple times with like fucking concussive grenades. And Bridge is like, you made these children evil. And Cable says, I still respect you, GW. Don't denigrate me by denigrating what we're doing here. We have a job to do. You have a job to do. We did ours better than you did yours. Simple as that. And then the whole base caves in. Bridge doesn't get a lot here, but it's fun. And you start to
No.
see he's very pissed at Cable.
Yeah. And I mean, and rightfully so. But again, at this point, you're so not told anything. You're like, why does he have a grudge? Like, can you let us know? Why? What, like, what's happening? Like, why are they so like adamant to? No, I'm not even gonna say adamant. Cable's just like, hey, chill out. And GW's like, no, like, I'm not doing any of this.
Well, he's been given unlimited funds by the government to take this guy down. Do you want to tell everybody about Cable, Blood and Metal, that two-issue limited series?
There was a miniseries called Cable, Blood and Metal. So in it, it was about 10 years into the Terran Iran area and the Wild Pack, which at that point was Cable, Domino, Grizzly, Bridge, Kane, and Hammer, was just on a mission. And then in Afghanistan, they had to do the same thing. Then at one point in time, they changed the name from Wild Pack to Six Pack. And then Cable breaks a contract to escape, meanwhile making GW super duper bad. Then later on, 6 years later in Singapore, Cable takes a team to destroy Tolliver Tech on a personal vendetta against Strife. Not really this is team gigs at all.
So
Then
Tolliver's
they
a guy
move.
they keep going after over and over again, and you later find out it's Cable's shit kid Tyler from the future, but that's for another time.
Yeah, that's a whole nother thing. Like, he had so many weird familial things happening at this point. You never really knew with Cable until like later on. Then they went to Uruguay. Bridge has on his golden shoulder pads again, and then Strife attacks. Cable not only betrayed the team by letting Strife badly hurt Kane, he also shot Hammer in the back, paralyzing him when Hammer tried to disagree with Cable.
So Cable's like trying to get this tech from Strife, and he keeps betraying the Six Pack or the Wild Pack to get it. And in that last mission, the one that was like the last time Bridge saw Cable could have got the team out of there, but he like prioritized his mission without being honest with anybody about it. And Kane not only ended up hurt and getting a bunch of cyborg parts, but he shot Hammer in the back directly. Like, it was a direct wound from Cable that ultimately paralyzed Hammer. And Hammer is now a character with a disability in the present. There's some weight to Bridge's feelings about Cable. It just took us a while to get there.
Yeah, it just took us a few years to get there to realize that GW has been holding a grudge for what happened on this mission. Not just only what happened on that mission, but the fact of the matter is that he thinks that he was betrayed not only from a team perspective, but from a personal perspective, because now you have Strife and it looks like Cable, and there's no answers to that. Yeah, we jump back in the present. Bridge is in combat fatigue and still recovering. And this time he is being visited by General Jeremy Clark at Department K in Newfoundland, where Kane had been now given the cybernetic upgrades as new Weapon X. And like we said, those cybernetic
He can
upgrades
shoot his
were
metal fist at you now.
we can just with all of those really great 1990 spring action figure accoutrements and everything. And still wanting to...
Weapon Prime didn't work out, and now the six pack
No.
is back. The old
Now
team
they're
to get
now
Cable.
they're back together. Yeah, so still wanting to literally go after Cable now because one of the team members are paralyzed, the other one was pretty much maimed. They want to go after the Cable because now they believe that it's Strife.
Yes,
So
Cable's doing evil shit as Strife, and he's been messing with us all along, right? And
All
now
along.
Bridge has confirmation. Hammer has one of those like Professor X floaty wheelchairs of like a different design. He's still a tech guy. Weapon X is truly just a flop character, Garrison Kane. We'll talk about him another time. He's so 90s. He's 90s in an Adam Extreme kind of way. Like, he's the kind of 90s. He's 90s in like a Pogs and skateboards kind of way. He's a lot. So I'm going to cover a bit of Bridge's history like all at once, and then let's talk about what happens for this character. So when there's a time when Cable's space station goes defective and Bridge goes to Nick Fury and is like, put me back in charge of this Cable shit. So he's now screaming at Fury and some of the others. Network Nina is here. The
Yay!
ship gets hit by an EMP and X-Force attacks and War Machine attacks. And in the middle of all of this, there's one moment where Bridge yells at Cannonball, this is all your fault, Guthrie. Cable made you in his own image, all right. Stubborn and stupid, which you're one to talk, my friend. Later, the space station explodes. And when they land, Bridge draws a gun run on X-Force, but Layla Cheney shows up and teleports them away. Hooray! What a complete waste. Look what you've done, Cable. Look what you left in your wake. Destruction and disaster, your final legacy. And then we jump back over to Nick Fury, 45 through 47. My dear friend Gregory Wright wrote this one. This is where Nick Fury and Network Nina learn that Cyborg has been mentally influencing Bridge to favor Hydra on some missions. It's kind of a weird one because Fury gets to team up with Gideon and Cruel in this, and Bridge is in the middle of all that. It's an odd X-Men story.
It's such an odd duck issue. And I was like, wait, why are they here? Why are we dealing with this?
Cable gets his own series now, and there's a lot more room to explore things. And there's a giant confrontation, and this might be Bridge's most substantial appearance in some ways, in Cable number 3 and 4. God, I bought these books off the stand. I read them 1,000 times as a teenager. So Bridge breaks into one of Cable's safe houses. He like fights through the security system, and he thinks, I'm getting too old for this. The computer recognizes him inside, and I think this is the first time we learn his initials GW are actually George Washington. And then Cable's like sentient AI ship is here. We don't need to talk about this character right now, but he recognizes Bridge, and then Bridge opens up to the AI intelligence. Do you want to read his speech here?
Sure. It says, it feels weird, Professor, sitting here having a casual conversation with you. For years, when Cable ran with six packs, we knew he had you up his sleeve, some big computer he can only access. He never told us about you, never shared you. We always talked about it behind Nate's back. Grizzly was certain Cable was from outer space. Domino and I thought he was a time traveler. Hammer, with that rigid black and white mentality, thought you were an experimental Japanese sentient computer that Nate had stolen. And Kane, bless his stupid heart, didn't have a flying rat's butt one way or the other. And now one of us finally makes it into one of Nate's ultra top secret safe houses, and the big dangerous supercomputer Cable had hidden for so long just says hello, then makes me the best fucking cup of coffee I had in years.
So the professor answers, I received the recipe from the friend of a friend. It's a fine blend of Hawaiian hazelnut, mocha creme, and Jack Daniels. And then the professor posits that Cable's actually alive, and then Cable and Kane teleport into the base where Bridge is waiting. And Bridge tells Cable he doesn't know where X-Force is. And then this is one of those scenes in comics that, you know, it was not intended to be queer, but it's that early 90s thing where shirtless men wrestle and like compare dick sizes for several minutes in a film or like for several pages in a row. And they're so sweaty and they're so horny. And it's like wrestling amped up with oil. Both of these men have goatees because this is Cable's white goatee era. And Bridge wore it better. We'll just say that. And they're screaming at each other's faces. There's spit flying. They could just make out. So we're going to read their interchange back and forth. Just picture Andre and I just shirtless wrestling in tight underwear. I know I'm picturing that right now. I'm just kidding. I'm not that. I'm not that guy. So Cable yells, do not, I repeat, do not play games with me, GW.
Sure, Cable, no problem. Since you've always been so straight with me, how can I think of jerking you around?
Right? The dialogue, you guys, right?
Yeah.
And then the narration box literally says, aren't they just precious? So Cable lifts Bridge in the air. Bridge headbutts Cable. They fall. Cable tackles Bridge. Bridge punches Cable in the eye. Cable kicks Bridge in the chin. And then he hits Cable in the chin. And then Cable uppercuts Bridge and then hits him in the jaw. And through all this, the dialogue is, after everything you put me through in the last year, you expect to walk out of here with your teeth still in your mouth?
Put you through, you selfish, secretive, backstabbing, lying piece of.
What kind of hypocrite are you, GW? Joining S.H.I.E.L.D. after the six-pack broke up and hunting me down like a dog after the things I've done for you.
What did you do for me, Nate? You blew up my friends more than once, too? You never treated me like an equal, like a friend.
I had my reasons, GW. You wouldn't have understood then. You're so thick, you wouldn't even understand now. And then Kane goes, coffee's done, guys. He's just chilling the whole time. And GW goes, talk about stupid. Nice goatee, Nate. Oh, this is you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. Let me shave it off for you.
And then Kane gives them the coffee and they like have a truce because they're all bloody and exhausted now. And Bridge is like, all right, I'll tell you about X-Force, but you have to promise to help Hammer out. And then he tells them all about the space station battle. And then they go after Domino and Grizzly and Copycat and Hammer. And Cable shaves off his goatee and helps Hammer. And they wonder if they can all work together again. And Bridge says,
If you promise to come clean with us and stay clean, total truth, no secret agendas, no personal missions, then we can work together. But we can't work with with you.
So the six pack stays together, but they leave. Fuck you, Cable. But they're all better now. All they needed was some shirtless goatee wrestling.
Wasn't this the time when X-Force was in Mesa Verde? Wasn't that was like when they were just without him?
It was during the time when they left Cable. They didn't trust him anymore. I don't know if they were specifically in Mesa Verde here, but when they enter the Extinction Agenda, like Cable's not part of their team, right?
No, yeah, that's what I was trying to remember. Like, I know that they kind of disappeared
Or
for a
no,
little
the
bit.
Executioner's Song, not the Extinction Agenda. That was New
No,
Mutant.
that was prior to Again, this was the perfect opportunity for him to explain to Cable why he was mad. He only said it once. He was like, "Hey, you blew up my friends. That is literally why I've been mad at you for so long." And then Cable didn't even say anything about it. He's like, "Oh yeah, sorry about that." He kind of just glazed over it.
I want to talk about the Bridge Cable dynamics specifically, but let's pause for just a moment. In Wolverine Annual 1995, we see Bridge in charge of a S.H.I.E.L.D. mission against Weapon X. The legacy virus shit is here. And then he gets a promotion in fucking Punisher Volume 3, Number 7. Punisher in
Of
the
all books.
Well, Punisher in the 90s weirdly comes up on my show often because there's a lot of weird X-Men stuff mixed in. There's a group of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents that have been messing with the Punisher, and Bridge is here to clean it up, and he has had a promotion. Do you want to read his speech here?
Sure. My name is G.W. Bridge. I've been adopted new head of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I'm taking charge effective immediately.
Try that again, say appointed this time, though.
Okay. My name is G.W. Bridge. Been appointed new head of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I'm taking charge effective immediately. Ordering all units to stand down.
Nick Fury has gone rogue and he fires Fury and he says, "You say one more word and I'll arrest your sorry butt and slap it in jail. That goes for all of you. I am in charge and S.H.I.E.L.D. will not be run like it was before. It is not the extension of any one man nor any person's personal strike force. There are rules and there are procedures and they will be followed, or by thunder, I'll get rid of the whole lot of you. You all comprehend?" Wow. So this is where Punisher killed Fury, but Fury didn't die, and now Fury has Punisher join the mob. And anyway, Bridge is the new head of S.H.I.E.L.D. Crazy.
Which could have worked for a really long time. Again, I thought that that's where they were going to put him. I literally thought that's where GW needed to be because, again, he set the tone and he understood. Like, Fury used S.H.I.E.L.D. as personal guard dogs, and he's like, "No, we're not going to do that anymore." So that's what that role was perfect for him.
It acted for approximately 1.5 days before Nick Fury went back in charge. Bridges at X-Force 55. In Cable 33, we get a flashback to he and Cable on a mission at like fighting the Mandarin's bases in the past. And there's a guy named Tremaine there who ends up becoming that flop mutant Post from the 90s. I hate Post. And then in Cable 34, this is where we see Bridge stressing over the Cable Hulk fight happening in Baltimore. And Bridge has a new job now as the quote acting liaison to mutant affairs. Do you feel like he was punished? I feel like they punished him to put him in this position. This is the
And I
equivalent.
don't know why. I literally don't know why. Like, why?
This is the equivalent of like the FBI post in like the Yukon territories. Like,
Like, he has no interactions outside of Cable into the mutant universe. No one would trust him. No one would talk to him. Like, he has no,
well, he was the
like,
leader of
nothing.
he was the leader of Prime, which the ME stands for Mutant Echelon.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But again, they were off the books, so we weren't really supposed to know about them in that sense. Yeah, this was a punishment. This was definitely a punishment because he could have been riding high at the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. at this point.
So he's now in charge of putting martial law down in Baltimore.
Of all places, she's
There's a moment where Dum Dum Dugan goes, "You know, this all wouldn't have happened if you took down Cable when you had the chance." And Bridge goes, "Sooner or later, I'll take him down." We jump to Punisher, where there's like Onslaught attacking the city with Sentinels, and Bridge and the Punisher have to work together. Now, this is interesting because this is Bridge's second time crossing the Punisher's path, and there's more in the future. So pause there, buddy. In 12 and 13, there's a very complex story. We talked about this in the Executioner episode. This is where Graydon Creed's running for president, and then there's that tolerant human preacher, Reverend William Conover, who's a Chris Claremont character. His wife got infected with a brood that one time, if you remember. And there's a New Mutant Liberation Front trying to
Yeah, I
kill
remember.
him, and there's a big base in Avengers Mansion during the Heroes Reborn shit. And Bridge has some like really loyal employees or agents. One of them is Kimberly with a Y. And Bridge uncharacteristically asks the Punisher to help S.H.I.E.L.D. Things go crazy. crazy. There's terrorism. Creed gets assassinated. Executioner's there. Bridge is around for some of this, but Mutant Affairs
Yeah.
Liaison, wow.
Was not happening. He was just like, nope, fuck it. I'm not even dealing with it. I'm going back to my old ways to get things done.
You know
And
who would make this
again,
better? He thought, Punisher.
yeah. Who can I bring in to mitigate and mop up all the shit? It's the Punisher, someone I can't control, someone who has his own agenda. Yeah, that made total sense.
So we see Bridge in Cable 3738. He's still the liaison, and he's really enjoying the job at this point, the narration tells us. There's
Yeah.
more Weapon X facility raids. He goes to San Francisco. He's looking for Kane. We then jump to Tales of the Marvel Universe number one, which is the book that launched all of the new stuff coming out. Thunderbolts is part of all this, but Bridge is in Latveria for a minute. In X-Force 6364, Bridge and Shield are raiding the Latverian castle where Cable's trying to rescue X-Force from that little teeny tiny village that Dr. Doom keeps inside, that he could shrink you down to an inch and make you live in his little dollhouse. That's a real thing.
Littleville.
It's
I
called
remember
Littleville.
Littleville.
Littleville with two D's.
I remember
Littleville.
Littleville. Yes.
The Bridge
Such
and Cable get to scream at each other some more, and Bridge promises to put in a good word for Cable if you surrender. Nathaniel Richards here. We jump to 66, where he recruits Domino to help Moonstar because she's a deep cover agent for SHIELD working for the Mutant Liberation Front during this time. I'm skirting
Oh
over so much
yeah.
shit. We've
Oh
got
my God, I
Cable.
remember.
We've got Cable 45 and 47. This is where Bridge warns Cable about Operation Zero Tolerance heating up, which is frankly what is fucking happening in our country right now. It's fucking Operation Zero Tolerance, and it pisses me off. Okay, joy, joy, Chad, joy. We're creating joy. Later, they discuss the threat of the OZT over drinks. Moonstar calls Bridge because of the Prime Sentinel's attack. We jump to Thunderbolts. He's in a bunch of issues where Bridge is in Avengers Mansion trying to track down Baron Zemo because he pretended to be a superhero that one time. He later makes the key decision to pass the encrypted Avengers files over to Citizen V of the Thunderbolts, who's actually fucking Baron Zemo. So that was a bad plan because they almost controlled the universe because of it. Bridge then gets to like lead some armored agents after the Thunderbolts, but they get their asses kicked. He even brings the Great Lakes Avengers to fight the Thunderbolts, but that doesn't go well either. So jumping into a lot of Bridge stuff in a row there, and we're glossing over major continuity shit from all over the place. But I think what you really want to talk about, Andre, is Littleville. That's what I can tell.
Listen, Littleville was such a wild thing because, again, Doom can do anything, and we know that he can do anything. I think Littleville was one of those concepts where instead of just removing his villains as you would think he would, he likes to toy with them because, again, it's about control with Doom. Yeah, Littleville was a wild ass kind of.
In Wolverine 118, Operation Zero Tolerance is kind of boiling over, and this is where Bastion's on the run and Senator Kelly's turned against him. And there's a moment where Cyclops is literally smoking from a gunshot as like Bridge is having this casual conversation with Storm. Will you read Bridge here?
You people are lucky that Senator Kelly blew the whistle on zero tolerance. Bastion is on the run, but we'll track him down. Hang him out to dry.
And then Storm says, "You people, whose side are you on, Bridge?"
I'm on the side of millions of Americans with every right to afraid of mutants, miss. That's not prejudice, just reality.
I'm on the side of millions of Americans who have every right to be afraid of mutants, miss. That's not prejudice,
Oh.
just reality. This is the
Oh,
worst thing this
man.
man has ever said, and don't ever call Storm miss in
Oh,
that tone, sir.
ever, ever,
You want to unpack
ever.
the politics of
I, you
Silverfire
know
and
what?
Bridge while talking to the Black woman who leads the X-Men?
You would think that he'd just be nicer. You know, you would just think, I'm not dealing with Cable, I'm dealing with someone else. But at this point, he was already being affected by what his job was during, he was rounding up mutants because of Onslaught and all, it's just the chaos. He pretty much had gotten used to just being anti-mutant at that point. So there was no ifs, ands, or buts, and he kind of came into that role because if you're there for mutant liaison, you're really not being a liaison, you're actually being an enforcer to make sure that they don't step out of line. So, I mean, it's a weird hill to die on, and it's a weird hill to fight on too, because again, we thought that he had squashed everything with Cable, we thought that he was fine, but he's harboring anti-mutant sentiment, and most of his team members had been mutants.
So this is a guy who I think he likes certain mutants, but at his core, we kind of just have to accept that he's a little bit mutant phobic. He's one of
Yeah,
these guys.
he's
He's a little
yeah.
old-fashioned, and he aligns himself with people in the government who are very anti-mutant, which brings us to our next string of appearances, Kitty Pride, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. number one, where Bridge is on Muir Island yelling about mutants and scanning them to make sure they don't have the legacy virus. We then jump to that very odd pairing of annuals by Carl Ballers, who is a man of color, a Cable Machine Man 98 and Machine Man Bastion 98. This is the big revelation that Bastion is the master mold Nimrod thing that passed through the Siege Perilous crazy story with the consciousness of Stephen Lang in it. And Bridge is monitoring S.H.I.E.L.D. agents who are emptying out Operation Zero Tolerance facilities. Bastion kills some agents, so Bridge brings Cable in to handle it. And they do their usual dick measuring contest. They don't throw punches at each other this time. This mission is off the books, and Cable realizes, holy shit, Bridge has to get everything perfect, and he wants me to do it. But he's having big doubts about what to do. Then Machine Man is here now, and Bridge is like, you were an Avenger one time. That's good enough for me. There's an old military general from Machine Man called General Krag who shows up, and he wants to order an airstrike on Bastion, but his daughter is one of the agents who's missing. So Bridge refuses the strike. Krag orders it, but the base blows up first, and Bridge is like, oh, some crazy weapon must have gone off. The end. It's insanity. But here's the thing. Bridge is showing up all over the fucking place, right?
All over the place. Yes, all over. Like at this point, again, he is integrating himself into certain areas. Whenever there is a militaristic push, he is going to be there. So I don't know exactly why, but like they were just dropping him in to be like this connective tissue. He reminds me of a supporting character in a police procedural drama. He's not necessarily the main character in NCIS. He's the three other characters who shows up area. Or like, of all of the 25 plus years of like Law and Order SVU, he's that one character that would come up every six episodes. If you know what I mean? Like he was like one of those
Or
guys who would just
if we
pop
go
up.
to if we go to the Marvel movie universe, he's that like one S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that shows up in each movie for a few
And each movie, yeah,
minutes.
that's he's that guy. Just like, hey, don't forget, I'm here doing things military wise, and I say these things, and I'm, gonna be all gruff and
There's a bunch
something.
of little interim appearances in like Iron Man and Cable and Thunderbolts, and we're not going to cover everyone comprehensively. One that's worth pausing on is Cable number 60, though.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Has been transferred to an office in Washington, D.C. And we had an interesting monologue for him as he's the narrator for a minute. Do you want to share that one with us?
Basically, what he says is, I've been here a week now. My office isn't even unpacked yet. For my new duties, I wear civilian clothes. The suit itches. The tie is like a noose around my neck. I was once acting director of S.H.I.E.L.D. Now I sit at a desk for 10 hours a day. Once I fought alongside Cable as a friend and a partner. Now I sit idly by while I fear my associates are making moves against him. The Washington Bureau has always been fairly independent in its actions, and I'm sure they like it that way. As director, I rarely had time to keep an eye on this department, but not that I've been unceremoniously transferred here. I've been taking a keen interest.
So he's watching Cable very closely, and then the monologue continues in the next issue, and here's where Andre and I can certainly relate. He says,
I feel old.
I feel old.
I feel old. I can see now why they wanted me out of the way. To those so sinister, I must seem like a fossil, a relic of a bygone age when men live by their honor and their ethics. Am I helpless to do anything about this? Am I as old as they think I am? Absolutely, GW.
This is us in the dating world. Were we a thing as at the ripe old age of 46? So there's some more things here, but we do get some moments where Bridge is just kind of a fun supporting character alongside people like Irene Merriweather. We're gonna jump through a bit more. He fights a guy named Blockade later in the Cable
Yeah, I
series.
remember that. Yeah.
I look up the Harmony Time Ship if you want a really insane Cable story that Bridge is involved in that we're not gonna take time for here today.
No.
It's a weird continuity dive. He's over in Cable number 91 is where we'll pause next, where Bridge is being pulled before a tribunal. Cecil to discuss all the times he's let Cable go when he could have been captured. And he comes in very military, very defensive here. Do you want to give us his speech?
Sure. I have nothing to hide. I'm proud of my work for SHIELD. During my career, generals, I have been forced more than once to make a snap decision in the field. I've always made those decisions based on the safety of my men and the good of my country. I assure you that I will never willingly let any terrorist, mutant or otherwise, escape from my custody. And then
They
they
hold Rose
try to.
accountable, but
Oh,
like
excuse me.
suddenly,
Sorry.
yeah, all their records about Cable have gone missing. And now he's been reassigned to a desk job in Alaska. But the generals who held him accountable end up getting murdered. And Cable and Bridge fight this group called the Dark Sisterhood, who are literally a secret organization of witches trying to overthrow the government. And Henry Peter Gyrick is here. Anyway, the through line for him is he got the upgrade to Director of SHIELD, then the SHIELD Mutant Liaison, then he's downgraded to that desk in DC. They hold him accountable and then they give him a remote desk in Alaska. So
Yeah, now he's being really punished. Now that, like, you done fucked up way too many times,
this is
you
the
could have
guy
brought
who said out loud in a meeting, "Are we
him
sure President Trump is a good choice?" And then everyone's like,
in.
"Get the fuck out."
But to his defense, you never really knew what his orders were. Like, there was nothing ever saying go after Cable, bring him in. There was always these moments where he had to do other things, then go after Cable. At this point, you just figured that him and Cable were cool because they squashed everything. But now they're like, really, we've been telling you, GW, this has been your job for a long time. You haven't done it.
So I think, it doesn't quite say it, but I think he quits because he goes back to, here's this old man feeling like an old man. He goes back to being a mercenary. He reforms the six pack. Now, I fucking love this lineup. We have GW Bridge with Hammer, the tech guy, Domino, Solo, who's a terrible veteran white guy who blows shit up. But we get Constrictor here, who's the electric coil guy, and then fucking Anaconda's on this team. And that's what makes it amazing. I love Anaconda. But they visit like Cable and Deadpool's little like secret city. It's called Providence, and there's some moments. It's fine. But Bridge is back to being a mercenary until we get to Punisher War Journal.
I mean, at this point, we know why. He's like, I've been sent to Alaska. There's no glory in that. There's nothing. There's no fighting. There's nothing. And I mean, we already saw him contemplating the being at the desk job, and he's just unhappy at this point. GW is not living up to whatever potential he had in his mind about what he can be, and that has to suck because now he's like, I didn't do what I was supposed to do. So now what? And I think at this point, especially at this point, because if anyone remembers in the Cable and Deadpool era of this in Providence, Cable is at his height of just everything. Like he is, I remember reading this that he basically made this island that's floating above the ocean and is full of people who are scientists and Nobel Peace Prize
And
winners
refugees.
and refugees. And he's like, I'm building a society where, we're just going to change the world positively. All the while, he is also at the height of his powers because not really many people are realizing this, but he is holding Providence up specifically with his telekinetic powers. An entire my island, he is holding up telekinetically.
It's Cable as the Messiah. If you've never read Cable Deadpool, it's very worth it. It's a great read.
Oh, absolutely worth it. Just the fact of the matter is that Silver Surfer came down as like, hey, homeboy, you're actually too powerful, and I got to bring you down a peg. But yeah, I think at this point, GW, he has run his military course and he doesn't want to be put out the pasture. At this point, again, he's not even getting a purple medal. He's getting nothing. He's getting absolutely nothing. So I'd be pissed too.
So this is the moment in the show where Alexander Hamilton has been humbled and he moves uptown and tries to rebuild things with his wife, right? This is GW Bridge uptown. So he shows up pretty prominently in a series called Punisher War Journal. We're not going to go through this series comprehensively. It's Rick Remender. It's really good, actually. I really like this series. We referenced it a few times, like in the Princess Python episode, which is amazing. So GW Bridge opens up the series. He's shaved his face and he's in a mosque, which is the first time we've ever seen that. And he's offering prayer when fucking Jasper Sitwell walks in. Now, I've shared on the show before, the reason I got noticed at Marvel the first time is back in the message board days in like the late 90s, I used to write Survivor fan fiction featuring Marvel characters. Instead of Jeff Probst in my fanfic, I used Jasper Jesper Sitwell. He was the host of my Survivor series, so I'm really fond of this guy. So Jesper Sitwell walks in and he goes, "Your country needs you."
Only two men I've ever met that wear Old Spice were my grandfather and used it well. 10 words or less. Why do you think it's okay to interrupt me
10,
here?
10, I only need two. Frank Castle. So Bridge is back in the game. The Shield has brought him back in to go after a crazy murdering psychopath. So Bridge is hunting him, and Punisher is being like lauded by the public for his actions. There's a giant stilt man corpse. There's news that the Tinkerer has been paralyzed. And Bridge is like, there is no way I can play by the rules and win. So he officially quits Shield, which you think he maybe had done that
You
before.
think that he would have done that already? Yeah.
But
I'm like, are
now
you still
he's
working?
going to dedicate his life to taking down the Punisher on his own. So he kind of sees a kinship with the Punisher. And for the next weeks, as he's tracking him, we see Bushwhacker, that fucking guy, taking hostages in Central Park, and Bridge is there, and he ends up shooting Bushwhacker in the neck
Neck,
when
yeah.
Punisher shows up just to stop things from getting worse. Bridge and Shield keep going after, so he's back with the Shield unit. He keeps going after Punisher aggressively, but now Iron Man's there, who's the new director of Shield, and he fires Bridge. The Bridge goes after Punisher again anyway, and now he's working with Stuart Clark, Rampage. We'll be talking about that guy cover on my show. He's everything. Who's a superpowered bigot. They also start working with like white supremacists, like the National Force, because Punisher has like infiltrated them to kill criminals, and they have to fight the hate monger, and Bridge calls Shield in again. And then Stark visits Bridge on the houseboat where Bridge lives, which has been docked in the Florida Everglades. This is a man who wants to retire, my friends. They offer him a new position and he says, fuck no. He rants about how government agents are contained by laws and Punisher is the one that can actually make change happen. And he knows that Allah will disapprove that it was wrong, but he let Punisher go and now he's gonna hunt him again. He's going through a damn spiritual crisis, he says. And he ends up recruiting Domino, Silver Sable, and Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine, and they go after Jigsaw and Punisher gets captured. Okay, that was a lot of information all at
There was a
once.
lot. There was a dump. It was a dump.
What are the changes we're noticing for Bridge here? First, what do you think of him in a mosque? He suddenly turned religious.
Suddenly turned religious, and not just like religious, where you would automatically think that he would go Catholic. He went with being a Muslim, which does not shock me, considering who he is. Being in the Black community, a lot of men, Black men in general, start off in a very militant way. Some of them, I can't say all of them. I think my experience with a lot of the militant Black men that I know of will go that route. And then at one point in time, find religion, and it's usually Islam. And then that militance aligns with it because then what they start to do is they start to let go of the things that were making them angry. They started to let go of the things that they thought were priorities and no longer priorities and are trying to change themselves. So in this moment, I had noticed the Malcolm X parallels in it. GW is again going through not only a crisis because again, he doesn't know where he fits. We don't know where he fits. He has quit Shield, has been rehired from Shield, has been fired from Shield, and for some reason they keep going back to him. So like every time he's like, I want to stop. I don't want to do this. I need to do something else. They keep dragging him back, and I think I want more for him at this point because there's nothing else that he knows of besides this. It's this militants. That's literally all he knows.
So when they offer them the job, he's like, fuck yeah, but then he quits, he goes back, he quits again, or they fire him, and then they offer him a spot and he says, no, I can't do anything here. And then he finds himself relating to the Punisher, both as someone he needs to take down, but as someone who can take action. So it's almost like Javert adopting some of Valjean's like values a little bit. It's kind of an odd thing. But when we see this continue, we jump to Punisher War Journal 22 through 25, and I'll cover the end of this quickly. Bridge captures the Punisher and just screams at him for pages and pages about how like useless and deluded and ineffective he is. But he also talks about, and Bridge says out loud, that he enlisted in the army at 17 and like saw combat really early on in his life. But then they fucking get attacked by Jigsaw and the Wrecking Crew, and Bridge has to let Punisher out of his restraints. He cuffs himself to the Punisher, so we get that old like a little rope. There's a big old fight, and like some super women get involved in the Rhino. And in the end, Bridge is like pretty badly hurt, and he's in a wheelchair. And Punisher is in custody because he turned himself back in because he promised Bridge he would. So he could have escaped, but he turned himself back in. And then Lynn Michaels, who's secretly been working for Bridge, shoots Jigsaw, who is in federal protection. That's a Punisher lady. So a little bit later, we see Punisher walking out of custody because there's been a power failure. He starts killing Skrulls. Bridge is back, and Sitwell is here. And Bridge got bit by a Skrull in in a fight. And then there's some like big action moments, but Punisher escapes and Bridge gets some help for Stuart Clark, who becomes the new Jigsaw, the end. So a lot of this is like, how do we tell a Punisher story? We also tell a story of like a good lifelong cop who loses faith in the system to provide commentary on how the Punisher is actually effective in his way.
Which was very, again, contrary to what we just established with him. Like we just heard that he was fine with the failures of the government because he knew that they were bounded by laws, and he somehow respected the Punisher because he got things done. But then on the same token, yells at him about how ineffective he is.
Yeah, he's a complicated thing. It's interesting to me when people project parts of themselves on someone and they become a little unhinged. I think this is a really strong run, and Bridges' journey through it, I think, is really interesting.
Yes, in this sense, because what you understand is that Bridge is suffering from imposter syndrome, and he's probably been suffering from it from a very long time.
Now he's done and he quits it all and he marries a younger woman named Sandy and she has a new baby named Tyler. We do not know the circumstances, but he looks old in this final set of
Old.
appearances. This is
Yeah.
Punisher Volume 8, numbers 6 through 10. He's married and he has a kid and he's living his little tired, happy life. And what happens to GW Bridge?
Comes home one day, Death Adder and Basilisk are there, and Sandy's throat has been slashed. They're looking for the Punisher. So Bridge was tied up and beaten until he used MGH to boost
Mutant
himself,
growth
mutant
hormone.
growth hormone. Yep, for those who didn't know what that meant, and fought against the villains. Pretty much, he got a power boost. Punisher soon drove a tank through the house to help, and Bridge was tossed off a roof, landing on a car. And in the end, Bridge was killed by Microchip with a gunshot to the head.
You know who Microchip is?
I remember him. Yeah.
Microchip is Punisher's little nerdy tech guy that designs his weapons. So
Yes. Yes.
Bridge amps himself up. They kill his wife. They kidnap his kid. He amps himself up after they beat him really badly. And then he gets shot in the head by a nerd. It's a terrible
Yeah.
way to die. This story's really interesting, though, because there's an infamous story from the 80s and 90s. There's a villain named Scourge who's jumping all over the place killing Captain America villains or Marvel, like lame Marvel villains. And there's a scene in Cap written by Mark Gruenwald where this guy blows up a bar, basically. He doesn't blow it up. He kills a whole group of obscure supervillains in a bar. I don't know if you remember the Bar with No Name massacre.
I
So
do, yeah.
in this version of the Punisher, the Hood has made a deal with Dormammu, and they have revived a bunch of the dead villains from that bar who are now going after the Punisher. It's a
That's
weird
right.
story.
Yes, I remember. Okay, yeah, I remember that. Yep.
So what do you think about Bridges' final days?
It was sad. It was sad because you have this career military guy who just really couldn't find his groove, so to speak, who had given up, who wanted to restart life, who's no longer in shape because by the time they killed him, he was shaped like a mailbox. So he was pretty
One
much
too many
done.
concussions.
Yeah, he was pretty much done. He was like, nope, I'm not even trying to bench anymore. I think it was just sad because of all of the things that he's done, he didn't deserve that type of fate. I think there was just a little bit more that he could have just been left with, but I think him starting a new life and going off canvas would have been enough.
It was harsh that they killed him at the end, but once in a while in a story, if there's a casualty, I'm like, okay, I get it.
But it's this type of casualty, a character that you didn't really know well enough to care about.
Right. And we're watching the massacre of a whole black family on the page, I guess, as
Yeah, like that is actually the more
well.
traumatic thing. That part is a more traumatic thing. But from a character like him, you're like, okay, well, okay. And that's the fucked up thing. Like we just kind of like disassociate with it because no one really cares about Bridge.
So we have one final appearance, which makes no sense. There's a series called Ravencroft about that like place for it's Marvel's Arkham, right? Like it's the place for the criminally insane criminals. There's a group called Janus introduced in the 2020 version of a Ravencroft series, and at the very end, I'm skipping over the entire series. Go look it up. It's Frank Thierry. It's fine. But at the very end, they introduce a new management group for the place. It's mostly supervillains. It's a weird smattering of people. It's 2020. The group contains Malcolm Colcord. Do you know that name? That's the director of the Weapon X project.
No, I didn't know that. Nope.
Yeah, the Frank Thierry Weapon X series with the concentration camps. He's the guy. He's the guy that like beat Aurora up and like slashed her face with a broken bottle to scar
Yes.
her
Okay.
in a
Yeah.
moment of
Okay. I remember
sexual
that.
violence. So Malcolm Colcord, Contessa Allegra de Fontaine, who is a longstanding Nick Fury character, who right before this series was revealed to be a deep-seated like Hydra cover.
Hydra. Yeah.
And then
Madam.
Hydra,
yeah.
LMD. So then we have James Hudson. You know who that is?
Vindicator. No,
Yeah.
sorry. No, Guardian, excuse
He's
me.
both.
Both, yeah, at this point, yeah. At this point he would be, is he, did he have on,
The
did he do Guardian?
founder of Department H and Alpha Flight, the guy who like makes Wolverine go out on missions for a bunch of.
Yes, and so yeah, Guardian, excuse me. I'm just trying to remember because it
Well,
was
he's
like all
both. He
these
has
different.
both names.
He's
Then we
both, yeah,
have
he's both.
Monica Rappaccini, who's literally the scientist supreme over AIM. And then we have fucking Madame Viper, like Madame Hydra. And then GW Bridge is in this mix of people who are overseeing Ravencroft. And there's no fucking way this is GW
No
Bridge.
way.
It's a
No.
Skrull, it's an LMD, it's a shapeshifter. There is no way this is Bridge. So that's his final appearance, and I hate it.
Because it makes no sense. It's like none of it makes sense. I think again, they just didn't know what to fucking do with them. Like at that point, like leave him alone. Leave him alone. Like putting him on this team, leave him alone.
He was
Unless
resurrected by Mephisto, which
Yeah, I was like,
does not
unless
make
they
any
needed
sense.
him for one particular reason and he knew something and he needed it for his expertise or his knowledge, there was no reason for him to be here. No.
So we've analyzed Bridges' history. We've had some conversations about his portrayal, his motivations, his politics. As we're sitting with kind of the finality of this conversation, what's the energy for you? What's standing up? How are you feeling about this character?
I'm still middle of the road. I understood. I understand him. I understand him fully now. Now that I've had some years between his introduction versus where he ended up, I get it. He is enjoyable when you have him on a path. And when you take him off that path, he is no longer enjoyable. I think GW is great when he was a mercenary, but not a preachy government agent, if that makes sense. Because the thing is, again, there are two different dichotomies that are happening here. And he was always straddling that fence. And I think that is his downfall as a character.
He's not a character who has a lot of sense of humor. There's not a lot of
No.
warmth in his relationships. He can crack a beer. His relationship with Cable's interesting. His relationship with Punisher is interesting. But I think
He
he
makes
can.
frenemies everywhere.
Well,
Like,
I
it's
think,
literally just
yeah,
frenemies
you pair him
everywhere.
up against like Nick Fury or Network Nina or Eisenhower Hammer or Weapon X, and there's some things Domino. Like there's some things that I think in a few lines of dialogue we could develop a different type of fondness for him. I do like that he's complex. I also like that he's unique and visually striking. You see this character and you know exactly who he is. And
Exactly who he is, yeah.
kind of the only other character besides Nick Fury that's ever gotten that level of attention is like Maria Hill. And like GW Bridge and Maria Hill interacting would actually be
Or
really
Dugan or Dum Dum. Dum Dum, like you knew it was Dum Dum because of the facial hair and the hat. Like you knew
But then he
who
became
these
an evil
characters were.
army of LMDs.
Yeah.
But I would love to. I think it'd be really interesting to write like a Bridge Nick Fury Jr., but especially Bridge to Maria Hill. That's a really interesting dynamic.
I think if he fits into the world now, like if he does the Nick Fury Jr., like you said, like the Maria Hills, the Nick Fury Juniors, I think if you give him a sense of direction, he can be really well written. I think he has the expertise, he has the knowledge, he has the understanding of all of these organizations that he's ever been in, and no one's tapping into that.
He doesn't
Like
get a lot of.
he could be a very strategic, a strong military mind, and no one taps into that.
He also doesn't get a lot of moments of success. He's either the try-hard character who's ultimately like failing because he's just a foil to the heroes. And if only Bridge would try to understand, we get those moments. We get the military like rigidity, and then we get the like moral, like, oh, am I doing it right? That's the Javert piece I keep referencing. Like, I was trying to live by the law, and is this the right thing? The most compelling part of this man is his slow demotions and then like getting more and more tired to the point that he moves to a houseboat in the Everglades and then marries a
Everybody's
younger single mom.
Yeah, completely out of his league, but yet, he's willing to take on somebody else's child. Like he was just like, no, I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. And then gets roped in. But I think you raise a very good point. There is a sense of failure that haunts him and that has molded him, that has allowed him to settle for anything that's thrown at him. And that's the other thing that was very, very telling about who this character was, because he would literally compromise whatever ethics, integrity he had just for a chance to prove himself again. Like he kept taking these things, saying, okay, I can do it this time. I can prove myself, but then doesn't.
I hate that he's dead, but now that he's dead, I'd probably rather him stay dead. I don't know if this is a character we need back, unless it's done really well.
Unless it's done really,
But I
really well.
also
Unless,
hate his ending.
yeah.
My wife's throat got slashed. I amped myself up with mutant growth hormone, and then I got shot in the head by a white nerd. That's not a good way to go.
Not a good way to go. No, not in these these post-racial times that we live in. No,
I love these
definitely.
conversations, though. This is a character that I don't know that I had many feelings about, but because of this now, I have very strong feelings about this character.
I mean, yeah, when you put him under a microscope, you can. Like, again, he is a character study because now you've had decades of just not him sitting in an X-Men book. You've had him run into, Nick Fury's books, into S.H.I.E.L.D., into Punisher, which he didn't fit in for some reason, but yet he was there. Like, there's some depths that you can go into and really get into his psychology. And I wish everyone were able to do that instead of thinking about him as like this ancillary character that just pop ups, every now and
This
again.
will not happen for a while. I'm not putting it on the spreadsheet, but I am putting it on my list. We're gonna do a Network Nina episode someday.
I need that. The other redhead, the other telepathic redhead, Network Nina. I swear, I thought she was, I swear when Nick Fury Jr. showed up, I was like, that's his mother. That is literally his mother. I knew it. And it wasn't, but I was it's like, yes, she doesn't get as much again. And I know back then, because again, these are these characters, these ancillary characters and supporting characters in these books back then. I know she didn't get a lot, but she was there. She had an
I'm
inkling.
doing a quick scan before we close. She has 37 appearances. That's impressive. Yeah, we're going to talk about Network Nina someday. All right, my friend. Andre's scheduled to come back on the show as the voice of Angel in our upcoming Champions launch. We're going to do a reading of the Champions books, which are some of the worst written comics of all time. It's going to be so fun to read out loud. I'd love for you to share with people where they can find you online. Is there anything you want to plug? We're going to put this out on February 19th.
Awesome. So nothing to plug necessarily, but just keep eyes out on anything cosplay related. Not any new shows right now, but like there will be some announcements coming up soon of where I'm going to be for 2025. But you can find me on all the socials at Talk Nerdy to Me, and that's TALKNRDY #2 ME. IG especially, you can find me there. And also Blue Sky. I don't do anything yet, but I'm on there just to hold my purse.
You and I are of an age where learning a new app just takes so long, and then we're dedicated to what we learned
I
forever.
don't want to fight. I don't. You know what it is? I'm good. I think I'm a tech savvy person. I just think that when it comes to voicing my opinions and just having conversations, I'm a type of person now, and I am the man of that age. Why I'd rather have it in person with people. I don't want to project my voice onto the internet about everything.
No, nor do I. I only share about the show at this point. Not a safe word.
Yeah,
I'm
like,
not
and
sure.
yeah, unless it's about cosplay or it's about something in my life that I'm finding enjoyable.
Which is why
That
cultivating these spaces of joy right now, especially, is so
absolutely,
important.
absolutely.
And I love hanging
You
out with
could,
you
yeah.
every time, my friend. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd rather have this discourse than anything else.
Lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. I keep my own social media private because I got kiddos. Andre and I are already friends. Next Patreon episode you can watch for immediately after this one is about Dr. Abraham Cornelius from the Weapon X Project. I'm being joined by the hosts of Escape the Mojo Verse. I bet Bridge knows Cornelius. He had some Weapon
I'm
X.
sure. I'm sure.
And then over on the
I'm
main show,
sure.
watch for the hilarious trial of Shanna the She-Devil coming up at the end of February. It's going
I
to be
cannot wait for that. I really can't wait for
delightful.
that. I can't wait for
You
that.
have become friends with my dear friend Harem Scarum, who's joining me for that. And we have already been laughing for months.
I can imagine because Shauna is messy. I remember how messy she used to get. She is messy, and I cannot wait.
On the topic of white jungle ladies, I now feel like a small expert, so I'm ready to go. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thank you so much, Andre. We'll see you back here next time on the Grey Malkin Lane Patreon. And now stay tuned for some thoughts on fascism as a special guest and I talk about a Red Skull story and its modern applications. In 1942, the Nazis attempted Operation Pastorius, in which they recruited eight Germans who were living in the United States to blow up key factories during the American war effort. The plans were foiled when two agents, these are German agents, George Dosch and Ernest Berger, ended up defecting to the United States, turning on the other agents, thus leading to their capture. All six of these captured people, although they never actually sabotaged anything, were put to death. And the two that defected, Dosh and Berger, received prison sentences before being let free. A few years later, in 1944, on the war front in Europe, Hitler launched Operation Greif, meaning Griffin, where German soldiers were dressed in American military uniforms and sent in American vehicles to sneak in and destroy American assets while taking back some key bridges that were needed in the war effort. So, some soldiers defeated, the tanks were acquired. Let's put on their uniforms, see how that goes. Some American soldiers ended up killed in these efforts, but the plans ultimately failed. The Americans and their allies ended up putting much stricter rules in place to make sure that the screening was very clear about who was using the uniforms and the vehicles to avoid further damage. Both of these German operations yielded low results in the German war effort. We're now going to jump to Invaders 5 and 6, Marvel Premiere 29 and 30. This is a book from 1976 written by Roy Thomas, who loved and idolized all of the World War II heroes, and he got to tell stories with them that were set during World War II. There's a ton of queer energy in both of these teams, the Invaders and the Liberty Legion, which we'll be talking about today. The story we're referencing today, after murdering an American politician named Bettman Lyles, Red Skull had him replaced with a Nazi agent. Then at a war bonds rally, Red Skull attacked and captured Captain America, the Submariner, and the Human Torch and Toro, leaving Bucky behind because he saw him as not worth the effort. The Red Skull then used a hypnosis device to mind control the four heroes he'd captured into thinking that they were Nazi agents and sent them to destroy a munitions factory while spouting Nazi propaganda. Another example of Captain America working for the Nazis against his own will. Bucky gathered several World War II heroes to fight back, including the Wizard, the Thin Man, Miss America, the Red Raven, the Patriot, Jack Frost, and Blue Diamond. And he formed a new team called the Liberty Legion. The Red Skull sent the mind-controlled invaders to destroy American landmarks like the Statue of Liberty, the Lincoln Memorial, the Liberty Bell, but the Liberty Legion repelled them at each site. Ultimately, the Red Skull addressed the American public over the radio, basically propaganda through a very direct Nazi voice. The action ends in a battle between the heroes at Yankee Stadium, and the Red Skull seemingly blows up with his own ship at the end, which, of course, we already know he made it back. So we've been talking about 70s Red Skull stories. Now we're jumping back to the 40s from a 70s tale. Let me welcome one of my favorite people, the incredible Emmett Yanamura, with me today. Emmett, welcome. Are you a Red Skull fan?
Oh, I mean, what does that mean? No. No, absolutely not. I mean, I actually really like his character as far as arch villains go, because my God, I mean, if you want to put like 100% bad into one character, there you go, especially if you want to represent fascism, right? Oh, these were a very interesting read, especially with what's going on today.
The Red Skull as a supervillain, the mustache twirling, sitting in a chair with a remote, but wah-ha-ha, like a cat in his lap. There's something crazy about that always, but this is a clear Nazi, like swastikas all over the place. What was it like for you to read this character, who I often see portrayed almost like he's Donald Duck throwing a temper tantrum? It's a crazy thing to put in a cartoon.
It is, it truly is. And at first, you would always think, like, wow, I mean, we have to go to extremes in our cartoons, right? But honestly, I mean, he's so similar to someone today that it was kind of like, you know what? All of this tracks and it's so cartoony, you can't help but laugh at it. And I like it because I think what's comforting about these comics is it makes the line between good and evil just so obvious, which is kind of fun. It makes it just really easy to read, especially with what we go on with today, where there's a lot of gray areas. So
Yeah,
I.
but in our books, fascism is always, right? The Friends of Humanity or Orcus or whoever we're reading about in the X-Men books, it's fascism every time. Those are always the baseline of evil, and the Red Skull is the ultimate version of that.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I love the mustache twirling of it.
The goal here, which often it is for the Red Skull, is let's take these American symbols, turn them to my cause, and burn down what America constitutes as having value, right? Let's besmirch Captain America and his friends and make them burn down the Lincoln Memorial through hypnosis while I address them on the radio.
Yes.
What are your
It's always interesting when they try to attack what they think the stereotype of the American heart is, where it's our monuments, it's these symbols of our past, it's the ways we've broken out before. I love that final battle in the Yankee Stadium, the whole audience is they know that the place is going to be attacked, yet the stadium is full because they're like, well, we're just here to see what happens. And I'm like I mean, I kind of can't get over just how fun that spectator commentary is of still showing up to the battleground and just being like, I don't know, we might not get out of this. Like, but you chose to go.
Two of the
Like,
men are literally on fire. Yeah.
yeah. It's like, what are you guys doing? You know this will be dangerous, but they want the, you know, you've got the spectator commentary there as well. So yeah, it's very interesting, but I think it kind of strikes too, where people try to control you with your symbols and try to break you that way.
Yeah, and it's also cracks me up. Like the symbols are the Statue of Liberty, the Liberty Bell, and Yankee Stadium.
Pinky Stadium, all very like, okay, I guess we're just attacking the East Coast
We
today.
need a slice of apple pie somewhere in here, please. The real world examples I provided early on, the German agents trying to infiltrate America, the German soldiers trying to use American tanks. It's interesting when you kind of stack these real things up with comic book plots. What was it like for you to hear those?
It was very like, oh, it makes sense that again, I think art always reflects what's going on in the world, and I love that Roy especially seems to have that huge passion for history, that it's very easy to take stories like that and turn them into, okay, well, what if those soldiers were actually our own, and what if it was a Captain America of all people? So I think it's a really great way to kind of actually engage kids and just adult readers on real history and real things that actually have happened, even if it is in a totally cartoony, fantastical way on the on the surrounding side of it. But it's almost encourages me to be like, let's go read more of these stories that are in our history books.
The Invaders series is really fun, and there's a lot of real-world examples in them. I actually really enjoy this series. We have 10 superheroes running around. Only one of them is a girl, the iconic Miss America. I'm assuming some of these characters were probably brand new for you. Did you have comments just kind of leaning into the silly superhero version? Because this is kind of a weird version of like the United Nations, and we have characters that are from different nationalities, even different dimensions, all working together in this kind of odd superhero team.
It was really weird how often some of these characters are like, well, I'm not human, even though they look the most human that you've ever seen. And then to kind of have a bit of racism going on, even between the heroes, as far as like, well, I'm not human, but I guess I'll help. Well, you're kind of meta-human, but I guess you can help us. It was really interesting. And Miss America, I always get worried when you have female representation, but thankfully, I think they knew how to kind of handle her well, where maybe a character would be sexist towards her, but then she's totally handling her own on the battlefield. And like, there's no commentary then about that, about like, oh wow, look how lucky she got or anything. I was like, no, they know that she can handle it. So I really did appreciate that, especially for the era. I think the most interesting one who I didn't know was Blue Diamond, and how often he has to be, I'm an anthropologist, I majored in anthropology. And so it just kind of cracked me up the whole time, where I'm like, dude, just please stop, like, you're just being such an ass right now.
Blue Diamond, Jack Frost, and Red Raven give major, like, closeted queer energy in their
Oh,
own ways. I have a Red Raven episode out there, but I haven't done the others. And then Miss America, later in continuity, marries the Wizard. And in the 70s, they were reported to be the parents of Wanda and Pietro, before that got retconned into Magneto. But there was a time when it was Wanda and Pietro Joyce. No, Frank, because his the Wizard's last name is Frank, which is there's some interesting X-Men dives. But the name The Wizard with his yellow costume.
yeah, I mean, even Roy called that out in the little blurbs underneath, where they're like, look, we didn't name him, this is an old name. But I kind of dug like what his powers were and what the limitations were. Even though he's fast, like, they were still kind of trying to separate him from other speedsters, and I was like, okay, we're gonna call him the Wizard, fine, whatever. It's interesting, it's definitely an interesting read, but
I
I'm trying
also
to
really
keep
love
alive.
the I love the Thin Man, especially kind of
Yeah.
that horror archetype. He's kind of fun too. This is a fun team. Go look up the Liberty Legion, everybody. You'll find some random adventures and a smattering through the superhero antics of the invaders.
I actually really did like Thin Man and what he could do, because you're right. Like, not only is his name kind of creepy because you think of Slenderman, but then when there's like thick Nazi doors, like metal doors on these airships that are closed tight, and they're like, oh no, he just kind of thinned his way through. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. I wonder how thin he can go. But you know, I was actually really kind of intrigued by all of their superpowers, and I did actually want to then go and find more of them, because what an interesting team.
The Thin Man's real name is Bruce Dixon. These
He's
characters,
not helping himself.
they're all 1940s archetypes. It's really fun. For those of you that may, I don't think we'd ever cover this on the show, but there's a series called The 12 that was it came out about 10 years ago. That's a bunch of forgotten World War II heroes that all exist in the 40s comics, where they like all wake up from suspended animation in the modern era, and the stories are actually really fucking good. It's a 12 issue limited series, called The 12. Well worth looking into. It's a ton of fun.
Okay.
And you can see these characters all over the place. In fact, Jack Frost just got used by Steve Orlando in a Scarlet Witch story quite recently. Okay, now we got to talk about the real world applications. It's 2025. When we look at the kind of fascist ideals of let's invade another country, let's take the broken parts of their system and highlight them, unite people under a banner of hatred towards certain others so that then they have to sign up for all of the cause, right? Let's melt down the old things and turn them against. And I know this is a silly 50-year-old story, but it's
No, it's just as accurate today as I think it always kind of has been. I mean, I was just having that reflection when rewatching Cabaret recently, where I'm like, oh, it's all the same and it's happening again. And so even with reading this, I'm like, there's a lot of patterns that cross over, a lot of like, well, let's separate people, let's put out scary propaganda to try and terrify, let's constantly just rain terror upon people in a very chaotic way so that we can use fear as a tool against them. But what my biggest take on this was the importance of Bucky and the importance of kids and the underestimated and what they can actually do to fight back. And that to me was like the crowning achievement of this comic series.
recurring theme in Red Skull stories, the idea of American youth and their clear-headedness, which sometimes means naivety, right? Because Bucky becomes the Winter Soldier.
Yeah,
To
for
those
sure.
stories a little bit later. The image of, and again, this is something we see in multiple stories with Red Skull, but getting on the radio and spouting these messages of hate, you want to assume that every person listening to that radio is like, what? This German man is awful. Like, turn it off. But you know that there's people out there that are going, ooh, listen, he has some good ideas here. People came to the stadium to watch the battle, even though they knew the hypnotized heroes were fighting for the Nazi cause as the Red Skull zoomed around in his ship up there, right? Silly, but also you're like, oh no, that's deeply painful to consider. The radio messages themselves, I mean, we can call it out. We have a lot of people online and even one particular major news network that are regularly spouting propaganda for the scripts that are being handed over. And it's rough because they say that the other news are doing that, right? Everything else is fake news. This is the only real thing. And there's always that like really uncomfortable world view that we see used again and again in fascist regimes. Any thoughts?
Yeah, there's one panel in particular that I actually thought was more accurate and more scary to what's going on today. And it's when a family is listening to one of the radio broadcasts because they're doing kind of a montage of different people hearing it. And one guy was just like, oh, listen to this. Can we just go back to our normal programming? And it's the lack of any empathy. It's the lack of wanting to get engaged in what's going on when there's literally an evil Nazi fascist yelling over the radio waves of what's going to be happening. Or even when then Bucky's doing his counter radio waves and the guy's like, can we just get past this so I can go back to my shows?
This
That to me is the
again.
scary part. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, okay, I understand, but we do have that a lot of what's going on today. It's great that we do have media and the internet that we can help spread messages faster, but people are getting so like worn down and neutral to it, or they're getting kind of used to it, or they're becoming kind of apathetic. I mean, it's an interesting trend that I'm watching that I've seen some people push back on, where not picking a side or not getting engaged is still making a decision.
As we're recording this in late June, my husband and I just got back from a few days in British Columbia. And every time people learned we were American, there was a lot of like, we're not becoming your 51st state. You know that, right? And I'm like, ah, ha, 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 ha. But there was a lot of like genuine kind of confusion and empathy from people who were like, I don't understand how you guys elected this man a second time. Like the first time I was confused, but the second time, I don't get it. And they would bring up the facts, the stuff happening in LA and this and that. And what about he's a rapist? And I said more to more than one person, like, I remember what it was like to feel surprised by the craziness of what was happening. But we're so inundated by it now, like I don't have the ability to be surprised anymore. And that like wearing down, it's almost like we have to disassociate to be okay. The other thing I want to briefly point out, the Red Skull could have just like blown up the White House, right? But he wants men on fire and men dressed in American flags and also one in swim trunks too. Burn down national monuments. It's the creation of spectacle because when we can light that on fire over here and watch it melt down, it gives people something to be outraged about. But what the fuck is the Red Skull doing that people don't know about? Like, what are the little plans he's seeing along the way? That's another piece, is that idea of spectacle is always really interesting with this character.
It's one thing to just do for the Red Skull like terrorist attacks. and to have these wins that you probably very easily have. But he's trying to actually just spread fear and get the people to also just feel completely numb to it and to basically make the country, like an entire country, victim to it. Because you're right, it's spectacle, but it's fear-mongering. And it happens. It happens all the time. It's an actual tactic. So it's fun to see it in this format and done in a very cartoony way, but it also gives you that gut rot feeling of, but this is happening now and people are doing this. And we do have even our own propaganda, like with Trump, trying to spew things in a different direction while other things are going on, like while arresting, people, people who just live in our country. It's insane.
Well, and we'll eventually get there with Red Skull stories, but there's a lot of versions of this of what happens when he does take over, right? Like we have those stories too that we'll get there. This is still the 70s. We got to get to the 2000s for some of those. Emmett Yanamora, I mean, not to just throw a big bottle of glitter at you here, but like you are talented and smart and wonderful, but you are also a person that every time I see your face, I just light up automatically. You are the happiest, loveliest, like spotlight of a human. I'm so glad to know you. Thank you for showing up to me.
Likewise. No, thank you so much for having me. I feel the same way about you, Chad. You're amazing.
Thank you. Much love, my friend. We'll have you back on the show again very soon. And can't wait to hang out soon.
Hopefully, we'll find a time. We
We'll
will.
find a way. All right, everybody. Thanks. We'll see you back here for the next installment next week with Paul Jenkins.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary, while supplies last. Tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.